center us. Then there are some people who are in a mood of servitude. When they saw Krishna, they dance. So this is Dasya Ras. Some of Krishna's friends were there, the cowherd boys. So when they saw Krishna walking in, Krishna and Balaram walking into the wrestling arena, they smiled. So they're in Sakya Ras. Plus, by smiling, they're also exhibiting Hasya Ras, which is actually one of the seven indirect rasas.
In which
Krishna himself says, although I have many fascinating pastimes, whenever I think of the Rasa Leela which I perform with the gopis, I become eager to have it again. And then there's another quote, also from the same place of introversion. One devotee has said, I know about Narayan, the husband of the goddess of fortune, and I also know about many other incarnations of the Lord. Certainly all the pastimes of such incarnations are exciting to my mind, but still the pastimes of the Rasa Leela performed by Lord Krishna himself are wonderfully increasing my transcendental pleasure. So therefore in this chapter 4, the point is that devotional service surpasses all types of liberation and also sense gratification is referred to. Then, devotional service, there are different degrees, different levels of devotional service. And devotional service to Krishna specifically is higher than devotional service even to any other form of himself. And particularly because Krishna has these special qualities. So now, we'll go over chapter 5, it's quite short, you already went through the summary. So we'll just briefly go over it. It's more focusing on the fact that devotional service also surpasses all types of bhakti, all types of material activity of any sort. Here. First point is that devotional service is transcendental, completely transcendental to everything material. Prabhupada goes on in the second paragraph to talk about the Nityananda Vamsa. Nityananda Vamsa means the supposed descendants of the family of Lord Nityananda. And as fate would have it, I happen to personally know a few of them. I also know one of the, well not so well, but one of the descendants of the Vajracharya. And they're nice people. But they have this idea that we are descendants of. In the case of the descendants of Lord Nityananda, they're not even actually the descendants. They're descendants of his disciples, but they have the mistaken idea that they're descended from him. In the case of the descendant of Advaita Acharya, he is actually a direct descendant of Advaita Acharya personally. But he himself is not so well situated in devotional service, although he's a devotee. The way we detected he wasn't so well situated in devotional service was that once, during the Mayapur festival, we all the devotees, hundreds of devotees, went to visit the house of the Vaitracharya in Shantipur where he lives. This descendant, very old man. So he used to know Srila Prabhupada, and even knew Prabhupada's father, he's a very old man. So he's telling us, yes, I knew Srila Prabhupada. He used to come and visit me, and he would come here sometimes, and my father knew his father, and I knew his father, and we knew each other. And my father said, my father, he knew all the saintly people. He used to go and visit all the saintly people, like, then he mentioned some names, this one, that one, and Ramakrishna, and Vivekananda. He would visit all the saintly people. So then we realized, he may be descended from a Vaitra Acharya. It looks like he got a little confused along the way. So Prabhupada's pointing out here in this paragraph that the Nityananda Vamsas, by birth, they're taken to have a very high position spiritually. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta opposed that. He wouldn't accept people by birth, even if someone was born in a Brahmin family, even if they were a Pukka Brahmin family, and then they joined the Gaudiya Math, they wouldn't be allowed to worship the deity until they had taken second initiation. Then they'd be allowed to go on the altar, and they'd really be accepted as Brahmins. So devotional service is something which is transcendental to Buddha. Therefore, Prabhupada makes the point that anyone can now become a Vaishnava by the potency of this movement. And what is the actual process? You turn over to page 48. Right in the middle of the page, it talks about some people from a country called Mayura Dvaja. So they are less than sudras, but they've been properly initiated. Therefore now, they're looking so wonderful, they are so wonderful. They're actually better than Brahmins, ordinary Brahmins. Then Prabhupada goes on to explain the next paragraph about Sanatana Goswami, explaining how the process of initiation transforms a person. Just like bell metal is transformed into gold. As long as the process is undertaken properly, it actually transforms a person. So that is the process through taking shelter of bona fide spiritual master, actually taking shelter, being initiated, and then being fully engaged in devotional service under his direction. Then any person comes up to a level higher than a regular, like a caste Brahmin, higher than anyone. But then right at the bottom of page 48, going over to the top of page 49, Prabhupada's making the point that even though you may be initiated by a bona fide spiritual master, but it doesn't end there. That is just the beginning. It has so much potency that you have to accept the initiation, meaning you have to really surrender at heart and really give up your attachments and really take shelter at the lotus feet of the spiritual master. And then if you do that, then you become transcendental. But if you don't really do it so wholeheartedly, then don't think that you have come to this high position just by dint of having undergone some ceremony, some ritual. However then, despite that fact, that you may fall down if you don't really fully take shelter and if you're not really so serious. Prabhupada then goes on, Rupa Goswami then goes on to give a fairly elaborate description of how even if you fall down, still you're better situated actually, even than people who are well situated materially. So that's something, but still we shouldn't think that it's okay to fall down. It's certainly not okay to fall down. But even if a devotee does fall down, and even if they're in a fallen condition, but they're still devotees to some extent, still they're actually better off than some first-class but materialistic Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or anyone like that. So the bottom of page 49, towards the bottom there, about 10 or 12 lines up, the main sort of qualification is given in this whole process for being properly situated through initiation and nicely situated in this very high position beyond other people. So, the quote from the 11th canto, 21st chapter, Krishna says, the distinction between qualification and disqualification may be made in this way. Persons who are already elevated in discharging devotional service will never again take shelter of karma or jnana. Then this is the main qualification now. If one sticks to devotional service and is conducted by regulative principles given by the authorities and acharyas, that is the best qualification. So now, what is he talking about here in principle? He's talking about Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Because actually this is what we're discussing. This is all part and parcel of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. So he's saying the best qualification, here we're talking about neophytes basically, who are becoming initiated and who are getting into Krishna consciousness and taking shelter like that. So what is the best qualification? That is that you stick to devotional service and follow according to the rules and regulations. And then you'll be very nicely situated. Otherwise, even if you're a big expert materialistic Brahman or Kshatriya, it won't help you. Now, so the point is that you have to be fully absorbed in devotional service, and you have to really get that shelter. You really have to get that shelter. Then it can be said that you're in a better position. Then it can be said that you've transcended other rules and regulations like Varnashram, for example. Otherwise, like take an example. Some devotees in ISKCON, they took sannyas. So obviously there's some reason for them taking sannyas. But despite all of that, after some time, they couldn't maintain that position. So therefore some of them fell down, got married, or left even in some cases. So what it indicates, or even just without even mentioning people who may have taken sannyas, but some brahmacharini, they're engaged in devotional service. They're not married, and they're engaged in devotional service, but after some time, they get married. So getting married means, essentially it means some like material influence, even though of course, we all know there's a place for it in Krishna consciousness. But previously they weren't, and they were engaged in devotional service. So, the thing is that unless one actually comes to the point of being fixed in devotional service, then one may have to consider because taking sannyas, there are two conceptions of that, two ways of looking at liberation. One is that a person is totally liberated, they're actually situated in the divine energy 100%. Another is that a person is effectively liberated, that they're no longer falling down, that they're able to maintain a position free from falling down, which is meant to be the position of a person who takes sannyas. Sannyas means materially dead and beyond the influence of material nature. Here it is what sannyas is. So if someone has not actually surrendered fully, then they won't be able to maintain that position. And then other considerations come out, how to become resituated in recognition of one's material nature. So this is like the theme here, that pure devotional service, when a person is fully engaged in devotional service and has really fully taken shelter and is really fully sheltered, then you can say that they're beyond Varnashram and any types of considerations like debts to the forefathers or karma, all these things. But until the person comes to the point of being fully surrendered and fully sheltered through that full surrender, then questions come up like, where should I be situated in the ashram? And even other obligations like that. Too bad, but still he's not a devotee.
then should the woman renounce the husband? Or should she just tolerate having a husband who isn't really so good, although he's not too bad to make her fall down? So actually the idea is that until she's liberated enough that she can do without a husband, then it's best just to tolerate him. Because I don't know really, but I think good husbands may not grow off trees. So, no, rather than throw one away, because he's not first class. Probably got married because he wasn't first class. But just to throw him away because he's not first class, and say, well, I want one who's really first class, might not be a very good move, because you can't just get another one like that. So therefore, until the woman comes to the point where she's at least sufficiently liberated, meaning she's come to the point where she's not going to fall down. She's not going to fall down if she's without sense gratification or without that type of association. Then she should just accept the position and tolerate. And also a person, like a man, shouldn't accept sannyas, or one should not, if one is a brahmachari, until one has become sufficiently liberated, then one may have to consider taking up household life like that. Until one has become sufficiently liberated. So any comments or questions about these things?
I have a question from chapter 4. That well, the first one is the seed of devotional service in a particular relationship with each other. So it wasn't really answered how some devotees should attract Krishna, but it's when we have the eternal relationship to a particular form of the Lord.
Your question is that if a devotee has a particular seed of a particular type of relationship, how would the devotee become attracted to Krishna, to another form of the Lord, basically? Well, in most cases they don't. That's why the only example of someone, at least who we're aware of, the only example of someone who tried is Lakshmi Devi. Now Lakshmi Devi, of course, you could say she has the seed, or her position is the consort of Narayana. But also at the same time, she's an expansion of Srimati Radharani. So there's a connection there. She's a partial expansion. She's embodying part of the nature of Srimati Radharani. So therefore, you know, the possibility that she might have some attraction to Krishna is existing. Otherwise, generally, the only other example of someone who's in Vaikuntha and who became attracted to Krishna, at least that I'm aware of, is the example of Gopakumar. He was in Vaikuntha, he was serving on the right, but he was still attracted to Krishna. So the reason for that was that actually he had the seed of a relationship with Krishna. So even though he went to Vaikuntha, he wasn't satisfied there, he was still attracted to Krishna in Vrindavan. So sometimes it may be that some devotees, like for example when other avatars come, they're forms of Vishnu. So due to the association of these avatars, like say in other Kali Yugas, there's also they're golden avatars, they're preaching and spreading the Sangita movement, but focusing on Lord Vishnu. So many people become devotees. So some of the people who become devotees, and they may become successful, they go back to Godhead, they go to Vaikuntha, through the mercy of that golden avatar. Some of them may actually have the seed of a relationship with Krishna. But because that particular avatar is not actually giving love of Krishna, so their love of Krishna is not awakened, although an attraction to Narayan, or Krishna in another form of Narayan, is actually awakened, and they become pure devotees, and they go to Vaikuntha. So such a person, because actually they have the seed of devotional service of Krishna within their heart, sooner or later they'll have to come back down, and in the association of suitable devotees, like devotees of this Lord, this golden avatar, Lord Chaitanya, they continue on from that point of very elevated devotional service. They can continue on and then eventually go back to Krishna. It's not that if they're appearing at the time of the other golden avatar, who's a Vishnu avatar, it's not that they won't become devotees, they'll still become devotees. And it's not that they won't be able to come to that, to such an advanced stage that at the time that they die, that they'll be qualified to go to wherever the avatar is teaching that they should go, which will be in Vaikuntha. You follow the idea? But because it's not actually with, like, their ultimate destination, then eventually, what happens with Gopakumar is he meets Uddhava and Narada. And he, Gopakumar, is feeling dissatisfied in Vaikuntha. He doesn't know why, but then Narada and Uddhava explain, because they know of Goloka Vrindavan, they can understand that the reason he's not satisfied here is because he belongs in Goloka Vrindavan. So then they instruct or they arrange for him actually to return back to the planet Earth. So somehow a devotee, like we were describing, they become devotees under a Vishnu avatar acting like Lord Chaitanya. Then they worship him, they go to the place where he's encouraging them to go, Vaikuntha. Then eventually, though, some way or another, they'll return and continue their devotional service and eventually go actually to Goloka Vrindavan.
The other question from chapter 4 is, when we speak of impersonal liberation, you see, we talk about the bliss, but it seems that, you know, Ramajyoti is like a neutral state. Like, where is the bliss in Ramajyoti?
It's neutral. Ramajyoti is neutral, but it's very blissful. It's said that the bliss of Brahmananda compared to the bliss of materialism is like a drop of water, or the water in a cup compared to an ocean. But then the same example is given to illustrate how the bliss of devotional service is greater than the bliss of liberation. Levels of being situated in the spiritual nature, and that's the lowest. but it is of a spiritual nature. So their experience is spiritual.